And Marius, thank you for that word. What I want to call this short message is a day in the life of the shepherd. And I did not speak to Marius, they were away. And he came and he brought me this word, and I was like, please share this. When you hear the word shepherd, and I think you've all heard about Jesus saying he's the shepherd. Most of you, if you've been in church any amount of time, you've heard that. What comes to mind when you hear I'm the shepherd? Like, I'm sure you have an image in your mind's eye, what it means. I want to talk a bit around that tonight. I'm going to use a lot of scripture, which is always good because I can rely on that. It's not my words, it's scripture. So I can hide behind it, I can talk about it, and it's not for me or us to try and control in any way. It is just to lead you through the scriptures. So my hope is that you will join me in looking at a day in the life of Jesus in the scriptures. Is that okay? All right, so here we go. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that chapters in the Bible is actually something relatively new. It was introduced in the 13th century. So the Bible existed for longer without chapters than it has existed with chapters. And if you look at John 8, 9, and 10, it's a classic example that sometimes the chapters are not helpful. Jesus didn't speak according to the chapters, okay? And you might find that the chapters break up one story. And in this case, the chapters break up one whole day in the life of Jesus. And we can miss the context. And I want to speak a little bit about that. This was what I'm going to go through, John 8, 9, and 10. And it'd be great if you do have a Bible, not a phone, because you're going to look at Facebook. If you have a Bible, work through it with me. And I'm actually not going to preach tonight. We're just going to work through a day of Jesus in the Word. All right. So if you've neglected to do Bible study this week, this is your freebie. This is your gap. Okay, I did Bible study. I went 3 chapters. One day. Okay. So the context of this day in Jesus' life, it came after a festival, a Jewish festival, and that was the festival of the shelters, or festival of shelters, and it celebrated the fact that they used to be in a desert and they didn't have shelter, and now they had a home, they had houses, and they have shelters. So it was this festival. It's about directly the opposite time of the Passover, and that happened, and Jesus went to that. If you want to read about that, read John 7. But Jesus went to that, and he caused trouble amongst the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders. They were upset. They already wanted to kill him by the end of chapter 7. Okay? So then, with chapter 8, it starts as the next day, or it says early the next morning. So I assume it's the very next day. Not sure about that, but I assume it's just about the very next day. So I'm going to read some parts of Scripture. I'm going to bounce around a bit. But it tells a story like this. Okay, so from chapter 8. So Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives. So think this is Jerusalem. Opposite Jerusalem is not a mountain actually. It's a big hill. We've been there, and it's a forest of olive trees. So he returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning he was back again at the temple in Jerusalem. Okay, so he's there again. You can imagine Jews going, oh, there's this guy again, you know, because he's irritating them. They believe he's sinning. Okay, they believe he's a heretic. So he's making their lives difficult. So he was back at the temple, and this happened to be the Sabbath. So the Sabbath starts early. It's like equivalent of our Sunday morning. But they were very much more religious about their Sundays, or their Sabbaths, than we were about our Sundays, in the sense because they weren't allowed to do any kind of work, not cook, nothing. Then a crowd gathered, and he sat down, and he taught them in the temple. So this was happening, and they're listening to him. And then the Pharisees, who already didn't like him, thought they would want to trap him. And they brought a woman that was caught in adultery to him. I think most of you know the story. The goal is not to go into that story. But they tried to trap him, because according to Levitical law, it should have been the woman and the man, firstly. And The Jews weren't allowed to execute people themselves. So they were, in two ways they were trying to trap him. And he evades that. You know how he does that. He says, let those who have never sinned throw the first stone, which is a preach in itself. And then he writes in the dust, and we don't know what he wrote. Some say he's the other's sin, or he wrote the law, or maybe he was just bored and waiting. But interesting, this was not, you know, all the movies show sunlight in the sand and people standing with stones. This was still in the temple. He wrote in the dust on the temple floor, according to this. This is all still going down within the temple. And then only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. So everybody else is standing around the outer side, outer inside of the temple, if that makes any sense. And then Jesus says, I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more. And then he speaks to the people again in the temple. So he keeps on preaching. And he says, I'm the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't be stumbling through the darkness because you will have light that leads to life. So he's saying this. So as we're going through, just pick up these nuggets, okay? And then the rest of John 8, he says stuff like, you are truly my disciples if you keep obeying my teachings. And then they say, but we are descendants of Abraham. You know, we are free. And he says, you're not free. And he keeps on contradicting them, and he keeps on upsetting them through that whole morning. Eventually, he states that he is eternal. He says, I existed before Abraham. He literally says, I am. So that goes on. And then at that point, in the temple, just before he left, they went to pick up stones to kill him. So I assume that's outside. But they were now so upset. At the festival, they wanted to kill him. Now they're like, that's it. He did it again. Now it's their Sabbath morning, okay? But Jesus hid himself from them and left the temple. So that's the morning. Now he's out the temple. So now Jesus is walking along, chapter 9, verse 1. So the story continues into the new chapter. And he's walking with his disciples. And then he sees a man who had been blind from birth. Then the disciples ask him. So not the Pharisees, his disciples. They're trying to understand, why was this man born blind? Was it the result of his own sins or those of his parents? So basically what they're asking is, why do bad things happen? That's what they're asking. They're using this as an example. It triggers them. And then Jesus says this. He says, he was born blind so the power of God could be seen in him. How often do we have questions of, why has this happened? Why can't I get a better job? Why am I sick? Why do bad things happen? This is one of the reasons Jesus gives. What are you not doing? What are we not doing to let the power of God shine and be seen through our weakness or through the things that go wrong with us? Are we fighting that? Are we resisting that? Then the next verse, he says, all of us must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent me. So we have specific tasks. All of us have specific tasks assigned to us. So we're not just called to be Christians. That's just what you need to be to do your task. It's not okay to just, okay, I'm a Josh Jenner or I'm a Christian, whatever. I don't think God's interested in Josh Jenner. He's interested in Christians, real Christians. I hope that makes sense. Thank you. But we often think, okay, I'm okay. I'm coming to church. I'm doing a quiet time. I'm reading my Bible. I'm okay. But there's so much more. He has assigned tasks for you to do. It's only the beginning. When you've gone, okay, Lord, I surrender, I give you all. And you think that's the end. No, that's just the beginning. Then he says, okay, now that I've got you, now that you're in your right position, now you can do stuff for me. And I've stuff planned for you from the beginning of time. And he says, there's little time left. Okay, so that's verse 5. So the chapter 8 was about a fallen sheep. The lady caught in adultery. She had fallen. Okay? John 9 is about a blind sheep. Because you see, they see this blind man. It's all in the same day. So you know what he does then? He makes some mud. And I think that was deliberate. I think he could have gone, be healed. But it's a Sabbath. He knows it's a Sabbath. And he loves to rub it into the Pharisees. And he goes, wait a minute, I'm going to do some work here. And he makes mud. Literally, he's working clay. He's making something just to show, I can do this. And then he does a miracle. In other words, then God approves. God is there because he can't do a miracle by himself. He does it by the Spirit of God. God is there. The same God that said, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. The same one that endorses him there by making the miracle happen. So he's just proving this is the way and God is with me. He's not with you guys. So it irritates them even more. Okay. And then it is very interesting. It's a bit of a, you can probably make a comedy of this. Like the blind man walks around and he's healed and is so happy. And then the Pharisees are, wait, this is against the rules. What did this? And they, these questions. And he said, well, I don't know. You know, I can see now. And like, is it really him? And you can see all this. You can read that. It's very, like if you look at it in a, if somebody can probably make a nice comedy of it. Like, and then the beautiful part is at the end, the Pharisees said, what did he do? Referring to Jesus. How did he heal you? They want the system. They want the rules. They want the structure. They want the recipe, you know, and there is none. It's God being God, but they want to box it, you know. So they want the system. And he says it so beautifully. He said, I don't know. All I do know is I was blind and now I can see. That's convincing. It's undeniable. There it is. You can have all your theories and your science and your studies and your learnedness and your language, whatever. I was blind, now I see. So when we talk about that, or people ask us about Jesus, and there's, yeah, but what about this quantum theory and the speed of light at creation? And you don't have to worry about that. All you have to worry about, or can say, is what you know to be true. Don't worry about the things you don't know to be true or you don't know about. The simple thing, I was lost, now I'm found. If you know that, you can speak about that. I didn't know him, now I know him. He always knew me. I felt his love. Like those are things nobody can take away from you. And this man that's been healed now, he does that so beautifully. So Jesus is backing up his words with miracles to prove he's legit in that sense. And in verse 41 of chapter 9, it says, so Jesus came and he says, to show those who think they can see that they are blind. So the Pharisees, they think they've got all the facts. And even in this, in today's world, people come with, yeah, but I know this, I know that. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, we spoke about knowledge puffs up, or 3 weeks ago, and I had all these bubbles. Remember that? And knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. This is the same thing. This is their pride. And he tells them, you are guilty because you claim you can see. If you knew you don't, you're not seeing like the blind man, I can help you. But I can't help you because you think you're so clever. So that was chapter 9. And they're just getting more and more cross. The conversation continues into chapter 10. I don't know how many of us have read chapter 10. Just as a new event. But where it starts, I assure you, where it says, I assure you, it's literally the next sentence. Oh, there's something behind me. Yes, that. I assure you, that's the next sentence in the same breath that this continues. So it tells them that you're not seeing well, you think you're seeing, but you're not seeing. I assure you, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief. And I want to read this part because this is actually what I want to focus on, if that's okay. So will you read this with me? We're going to read it relatively slowly and let the, like, will you marinate in these words? This is Jesus speaking. And he tells the Pharisees, I assure you, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief and a robber. For a shepherd enters through the gate. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they recognize his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't recognize his voice. Let's pause there. So what did Jesus do there? He just told them a parable. And it's a topic that they know a lot about. They understand sheep and shepherds. And that's why my first question tonight was, what comes to mind when we think about that? And I want to talk a little bit about that, because I'm not sure that we understand what they meant, what Jesus was describing there. So this is still a parable as he goes. But when he speaks about a flock of sheep and a shepherd, Amado, can you put up the first picture, please? There we go. So that's kind of what I normally used to think of. I don't know, is that what you think of when you see a shepherd and his flock? Yeah, it looks nice, it looks serene, it looks peaceful. I don't see any danger. They have lots of grass everywhere. It's lush. Okay, that's what I thought. Can you please put up the next picture, Amado? Okay, that's a picture of a shepherd and a sheepherd in the Middle East about 100 years ago. So they've had 2,000 years of killing all the wild animals. There's still some there. The shepherds there still die from wild beasts. In the Middle East, in the time of Jesus, being a shepherd was one of the most extreme jobs you could have. Like, think of the most extreme job now. This was probably more dangerous. It's literally worse than trying to protect a flock like that within the middle of the Kruger Park. If you've been to the Kruger Park, this is literally worse because they didn't have any kind of fences. They had a stone wall that anything can climb over. And I went into this. It was harsh. Climate, they can freeze, it can be too hot. The shepherds had to be tough, very skilled. They had to know where to be when, for what season, for what time of day. They had to be wise, they had to be skilled with weapons. Skilled in terms of caring for the sheep. If the sheep broke a leg, you had to know what to do, how to heal them, how to read what's happening, and then to protect them. And you think, the time of Jesus, it's just like a desert. It looks like a bit of a desert at the back there. There's some growth and things. But this is in the mountains, and that's where this kind of stuff happened. I went and looked at the animals that lived there at the time of Jesus. Okay. Hang on. Asiatic lions. Okay, they're bigger than our lions. Already there. They'll beat up any lion in the Kruger Park. Okay. Arabian leopards, which are also bigger leopards than us, like fat leopards. Wolves. There are two kinds of bears, both big, okay? They had jackals, two kinds. They had eagles that will grab the lambs. They had two kinds of hyenas. They had cheetahs. They had European badgers. They had lynx. They had boars. They had snakes and scorpions. Okay? So I don't know what your phobia is, but that is a lot of danger. It's not like, okay, we must watch out for the lions. It's not just that. Literally, wolves, leopards, jackals, hyenas. We don't even have so many. I worked there. We don't have so many in the Kruger Park. We don't have the same amount of predators, variety, as these guys had. Different times of days, different predators try and catch them. And it's not like, we can hide from them. Because sheep, they're not wild. They don't know how to hide or not smell like sheep or not make a sound like sheep, you know. They're noisy. So it was literally a dinner gong all the time as the shepherd was walking. So he was walking in something more dangerous than the Kruger Park with sheep screaming, "Come and eat us, come and eat us," and everything is hearing it. Literally, that's their life. Okay? These are hardcore guys. Shepherds are not like that first picture, the guy with a little, I don't know, hipster, I don't know. But another thing, the sheep relied on him 100%. If they did not follow him closely, they would be taken out. In fact, all of those, you never saw them because they were always taken out, because they, the good ones are with them. Also, a sheep, I didn't actually know this, needs still water to drink water. Their nostrils are too close to their mouth to drink water if it's any, is it rough in any way. So they can't go to a river and drink water. They have to find still waters. You lead me beside still waters. A shepherd must know where to find that. He must know where to find green pastures in that environment. But the predators also know where the green pastures are because it's a target-rich environment, right? This was hectic. At one point, I was a ranger in the Kruger area, and I remember taking people on guided walks. And they would always start with people looking and walking and la la la, looking around, and what's that bird? And we'll tell and say, okay, stay close, yes, yes. You know, and it's a little bit like, okay, come, the back people, they're talking, and no, come, you know, until you get to a dangerous animal, or even not such a danger, like a rhino. So rhinos aren't actually not as dangerous as they made up to be, but I'm like, guys, there's a rhino. They're like, and they're all like, you know, like a zipper, you know, like dominoes. And as you move, they move with you, you know, like they completely your shadow. Then like, oh, just back off, you know, we need to be able to run away, you know, if we need to. And it was just incredible how when they saw that, when they realized that there was even a bit of danger or perceived danger, they would submit, they would follow, they would be there, they would recognize, I need to be close to the gun or close to, yeah, yeah. So it was such a clear picture of this. 1 Peter 5 verse 8 says, the devil prowls around like a roaring lion. And it could be a howling wolf, a barking jackal, a whooping hyena. It could be any of those predators that were going for the sheep. But Paul writes that in the context of the flock. Go read 1 Peter 5 again. It's in the context of a flock because he says, I'm jumping to this now, but he says this in another place. In the sentence before that, he says, he tells the leaders, he says, take care of the flock I entrust to you. He says that. And in the next sentence, six verses on, he says, because the devil prowls around like a roaring lion. It's the same context. He understood this. He understood what Jesus meant. And I didn't. I didn't understand this. So the parable of a good shepherd, it meant something much more for them. It was easy for them to understand. And if you think about it, many of the famous people in the Bible, Abraham, Jacob, Moses, David, shepherds, they understood this. Okay, we're moving on. We're doing okay still. The kids are doing great. Really well done, parents. You guys are really doing well with, like, really. It's impressive. Okay. I'll try and rush it here. So from verse 7, it becomes much more personal. Because the people didn't understand what he meant. So he just explained it to them straight. And in verse 7, he says, I assure you, again, I assure you. So this is pretty, I mean, Jesus never lied. But when he tells you, I assure you, that's, you know, it's like, pay attention. Don't miss this. He says, I am the gate for the sheep. And in those times, the gate is the shepherd lying across the entrance of the wall. He lays his life down for the sheep. That's why they understood that picture so well. So any predator that didn't jump over the stone wall would come in the easiest way, which is over the shepherd. He says, all others who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. So they were sheep that weren't real, no, weren't true, that did get taken away, get listened. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. Only through me. And then we read the same thing in John 14:6, the same book that was written by John. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father except through me. And then in verse 3, he says, I just want to jump back. He said, I call them by name and they follow me. Not, they don't run ahead of me. They don't lag far behind. They follow me closely. And that just spoke to me that be careful of running past what God has for us or running ahead before his time. And at the same time, be careful of lagging behind. Fall in with his rhythm. He has a special rhythm where his burdens should be light for you and his yoke should be easy for you. Are we following closely? And practically what that would look like is, are we responding to his word quickly when we hear it? That would mean following. Are we doing things his way or like Frank Sinatra? Are our eyes on ourselves? How does it affect us? Or are our eyes on him? Are we watching the shepherd? Do we want what the shepherd wants more than what we want? Just throwing out some questions. It speaks about running from strangers. My sheep will run from strangers because they know my voice. That could be for us promises of another kind of abundant life, because in verse 10, Jesus says, I've come to give life in abundance. But there are lots of things in this life that promises abundant life for us. And we run after them. That could be deception, Satan having his way. What are the things that make give us fake promises? Okay. So he explains it and he makes it much more personal. He went from this parable to a picture to say, actually, this is about me that I'm talking about. I am the shepherd. And then in verse 9, he says, you come in through me, but then I will lead you into green pastures. So it's not just okay to come in. As soon as he leads you out. He has a job for each of us. Like in the beginning, he said he has assigned it to us. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. Wherever they go, they will find green pastures. Then 11 again. I am the good shepherd. So he's the gate. And he's the good shepherd. Verse 3, the gatekeeper. Who's that? It's the Father. It's the Father who opens the gate. Then the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He knew exactly what he was saying. We have to let him lead, guys. We have to follow him. He knows best. He's the only safe way. We can have life in abundance with him, or like Solomon realized, everything else is meaningless. Everything else is meaningless. Good shepherd lays down his life. And then Jesus says, now you do the same. We're called to live like Jesus. What would that look like for us? Do we have a real concern for others? I'll get back to that. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me. And this is one of the biggest points. He's calling for a relationship there. He's saying we know each other. We can follow because we know him. The sheep follow those Middle Eastern shepherds. They just hear his voice and they follow him. He doesn't drive them. And he compares that to a hired hand. I want to quickly touch on that. Because he wants a real relationship and a real, and we get real security in that. Verse 12, a hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will leave the sheep because they aren't his and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them. Then he says again, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me. And I lay my life down. He says it again. And then he says this, and I think he says this with you in mind. Verse 16, I have other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold. He's thinking of us. Because he was addressing Jews until that point. I have other sheep too that are not in the sheepfold. At that moment, he was thinking of the Gentiles. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, and they will be one flock with one shepherd. We're called to be together with them. One flock. Many folds, one flock. All right. So how far would a good shepherd go for his sheep? The answer is as far as it takes. The ultimate sacrifice. They do that. They will lay their lives down for the sheep compared to a hired hand to whom it's just a job. The question here is, in this house, are we all in, or is this just a job for us? Is this our life, or is this our interest? Because if this is an interest or an activity, or we're just fans of this, when it gets hard, you're going to go. When you get challenged, you're going to go. You're going to go, I'm not willing for this. I'm not. Sacrifice is too much. But if you give your life to this, if you give your life to Jesus and say, Lord, I'm all in, you're all in. And you will run your race well. We might be good, we might be skilled, we might have cool gifts and shine in church, but if it's just a job for us, it's going to fail. And Satan knows that. So the question is, are we all in? Jesus tells the Jews, you love and care the sheep to a point, but then no more. He says, I will go all the way. And the question is, to what point will we? To what point will we? And the answer should be, as far as the sheep need. If you are a leader here or aspire to be a leader, and most of you are, because as soon as you start following Jesus, others can follow you in a sense. How far will you go? What example do you want to be? A good shepherd, his life is connected to the sheep. A bad shepherd, his career, his job is connected to the sheep. So for us, it might look somebody forgot our birthday. Or we're upset for some reason, or somebody hurt us. We go, I don't like this. I'm not coming back to church. I'm not coming to the home group. Or somebody is really mean to you. And you go, that's it. I'm out. I've heard it a few times. That's it. That's too much. I'm out. So is there something like that for you? Disappointment, disagreement. So the first chapter, chapter 8, was about a fallen sheep. The second one was about a blind sheep. Chapter 10 is about all sheep. And this all happens in one day as Jesus describes to the same people that he's the good shepherd, and he compares it to the Jews in terms of how they respond to the fallen sheep, to the blind sheep, and to all sheep. And then he says this crazy thing. He says this, the Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may have it back again. Verse 17 and 18. No one can take my life from me. I lay my life down voluntarily. And I have the power to take it again. Now in history, many people have laid down their lives. They're normally heroes. They're willing to die for someone or something, and they do that. Nobody has picked up their own life again after that. And he can say this. So he must be either mad or God. Either mad or God. So he can say that. And then he proved it. He did exactly what he was going to say. And then in verse 19, and this is the closing. Merv, are you ready? Michael, are you ready? In verse 19, it says, when he said these things, the people were again divided in their opinions about him. When we read all these things about his living word and this account of this day with him, are we divided about who he is? Or are we certain? Are we certain in our hearts about who he is? That he is that good shepherd? That we really are in danger outside of him? That we need to hear his voice and we need to follow him? Or that prowling lion can easily get us in that environment, that rough, wild environment, He's describing it like that because spiritually, that's what we live in. We can get taken out. We just think it's all okay. So what do we put our trust in? Do we put our trust in that shepherd? That's my question to us. He knows us. He cares for us. He lays his life down for us. He died for us. He rose for us. And he returns for us. It's an ongoing story. And right now, this scripture is him speaking to us. Because in the beginning of this book, it says he is the Word. So as you read this, and you read him quoted here, that's him saying this stuff. It's not someone's opinion. So the question is, how are we doing according to this? Are there areas in our lives where we can walk closer, push more into the flock, care more for the flock, listen to his word more? Are you even part of the flock? You might be here tonight and what is he talking about? You know? Maybe you either feel or you know, I'm actually not part of the flock and I never thought it's actually dangerous out here. Satan would love you to think it's not dangerous. He would love you to think you're okay. He would love you to think you don't need a shepherd and you don't need to be close to him. He will sell you that lie every day of your life if you'll just believe it. But we need him. His word says it right here. Michael, can you guys come up? Thank you. You missed the previous hint. Do we hear his voice and follow him? Or are you one of those sheep that, yes, you've been in a flock, but you've strayed? You've strayed. And you need to return back into the flock, into safety. Because that's where it's safe, because he can protect you. Maybe you've not trusted him. Or you haven't been listening for his voice. But his voice is there, he's speaking. And you want to hear now. And if we're not following, it's easy. We can just turn back to him. You turn back, and he's there immediately. We can repent, we can follow him and draw near. Can we close our eyes, please? As your eyes are closed, can you just think of Jesus as the Good Shepherd in the context that we've been speaking about, in the context of his word?